Hello, and welcome to The Trumpet, the official podcast of Elephant Room Productions. As always, I am your host, Robert Jean Pelleccio. Happy holidays, everyone. This month, we wanted to take a break from our usual playwright interviews and have more of a lighter episode. So I thought, why not introduce the company of Elephant Room Productions to all of our listeners? So, if you'll indulge me,
Robert!
I'm gonna... One sec. Hey, Laura, how's it going?
Robert, dinner's almost ready. I just want to let you know it's time for the feast.
Oh, right, yes. I should have mentioned at the beginning...
Really nice feast. It's time to eat.
I should have mentioned at the beginning that we are currently broadcasting live from the Elephant Room Productions Holiday Special. I will be right out, Lauren, but...
Come on, it's time to eat. What are you even doing in here?
Well, as I said in the beginning of this episode, I thought it would be nice for our listeners to meet our core company. They've all really liked the conversation with you that we had in the first episode. Swoop, by the way.
Woo, all right. All right, I get that. Well, just, who do you want to interview first?
Well, you're here now. You want to just stick around?
Yeah. No, actually, I just remember that the chicken's still in the oven, so I have to go to that. But, I mean, we've got, like, Katie, Emma, Will, Phil's here, too, and Chris.
Wait, Phil's here?
Yeah, of course.
And Chris?
Yeah, of
Phil
course.
And Chris.
Yes, they are. Phil and Chris?
Send them in.
All right, I'll go get Phil and Chris, but you better make it quick, seriously.
All right, and first up today, we have Phil Zechner and Chris Uloff. Thank you for coming on today.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Can we just start out by having you to introduce yourself and your titles?
Sure. My name is Phil Zechner. I'm the executive director of Elephant Room Productions.
And I am Christopher Uloff. I am graphic / web designer of Elephant Room Productions.
Perfect. And the cool thing about the people in this room for this part of the interview is that all of us were a part of ERP from the ground floor. So can I just ask you both, whoever wants to go first is fine, but if you could just tell us what capacity you joined ERP with and how you got the ball rolling, how we got started in this theater.
Sure. I guess I'll go first.
Yeah, go ahead.
So Elephant Room Productions, I guess, for me when it first started, it was a idea that... occurred when we were back in Bloomsburg. And we always talked about starting this theater company, and we weren't quite sure exactly what it was going to be. And some time passed, and we all kind of moved away for various reasons. Some of us went to New York, some of us stayed in, or went to Philly, some of us stayed in Bloomsburg. And so we kind of spread out. And then one day, Lauren and Chris just kind of... I think they just sent us an email and was like, hey, so this is something we're thinking about. Are you interested? And that's kind of where it started for me. I first joined this company as the location manager, scouting out locations and, you know, doing fun stuff like that. And then, you know, times change and
things definitely moved around a little bit.
Yeah,
totally.
A lot of things have changed. But it was a really, you know, our first year was great, and we've only gotten better since then.
Mm-hmm. Trying to figure out our places.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing is that as a young company, we've had a lot of pratfalls leading up to our successes,
yeah.
And we've grown from each of them.
Absolutely.
Which leads into my next question, which is, what is the funniest memory you have from an ERP production, be it a workshop or a stage reading?
I can see
Phil's face like twisting. You've got. I'll let you go first. You clearly have something to say.
Go for it.
No. For me, one of the funniest things. This was actually right at the beginning, when we were first designing our Indiegogo video.
Oh yeah.
I know where you're going. No, don't. Oh god, I know where you're going with this.
There were a lot of really amazing things that happened that day.
Yes, there were.
I won't mention all of them because
time.
Because of time.
But I also
sure.
Know.
Let's say time.
But I think I also know where you're going.
But no, seeing Donovan wearing the elephant costume. Donovan is our company brewer. Mm-hmm. He brews us beer, and it's amazing.
he embodied that elephant.
But he embodied that elephant.
Throw the beer can at you.
Yes, I had beer cans thrown at me that day.
Pour the wine in the cereal.
Donovan watched pour wine in a cereal bowl and then eat the cereal.
That is commitment, God.
It was amazing. And I think that was one of... Not... It was one of the first things that made me realize, well, goddamn, these people are ridiculous and strange and funny and loving and kind and, most importantly, caring about what they do. And I've known most of these people in this company for a long while at this point. But at that moment, seeing everybody together and working in that capacity, I was just like, damn, this is something that not many people are going to get to experience in their lives. And I want to take advantage of it. And I want to make sure that I do whatever I can to make sure that we're contributing. Contributing to not only local demographics, but every demographic possible. And making sure that everybody knows, like, their story is legitimate. But going back to those funny moments, like, it was that moment that made me think of all those things.
Right.
Which made me fall in love with everybody even more than I did. So
I think my funny moment ties in kind of perfectly with that too, because it's one, it's like, it's hilarious, but also I think it addresses the same sentiment that it comes back to, like, how caring each person is. If there's one person that I can say is, like, the mascot of how caring ERP is, I want to say it's our very own podcast director. Oh, look at that, Robert. Whoa. When did you get here? But I just want to, it's too fun. It's funny. It was a little funny in the moment, but it's more funny in retrospect. So back when we were doing the stage reading of Beautiful American Soldier.
I think you might have taken my story, but that's fine. Go ahead.
It just resonated with me so much. I'm just sorry. Yes. Perfect. It was a crazy, crazy weekend. You know, we're trying to put together this staged reading, like borderline workshop production play in one weekend. And I know that Robert had another gig the same weekend, and we had extravagant props in this staged reading. We had a wheelchair. And I remember, like, the 2 weeks leading up to it, I was like the primary producer on this, I was like, I'm sitting there with, like, this wheelchair in my in my apartment, like, how am I gonna get to this into from Astoria into Manhattan and without, you know, because the idea was to resell it afterwards and, like, give it back in pristine condition. How are we going to get this without, you know, actually taking it over?
Like, couldn't touch the ground.
Couldn't touch the ground, exactly.
Nothing.
Totally. So then I get, I'm walking to the rehearsal space, and all of a sudden it clicks into my mind that Robert just told me he's driving up on Saturday night, Sunday morning.
Right.
So, like, after working this crazy shift.
What was it? It was like a 10-hour day or something for you.
Yeah, I feel like I was working at Hedgerow Theater at that point.
Yeah.
Because it was a Saturday. But I can't for the life of me remember what the gig was. But regardless, I went to sleep. I tried to go to sleep that night. This is my contribution to the story. And I just could not fall asleep as hard as I tried. I was up all night in a cold sweat. I don't know if I was sick or whatever. I did not sleep all night. And well, I think Philadelphia,
for all of us, the anxiety and, was kind of high. Yeah. We're like, oh, we're on the adrenaline of like putting on a show. Yeah.
But also for me, well, I was I was fueled more by the adrenaline of if I don't fall asleep right now, I'll only have 4 hours of sleep, or I'll have 3.5 hours of sleep, or three. Eventually, I ended up getting like 2 hours of sleep. Then I had to drive to New York, 3 hours, which I love doing. Mm-hmm. I got there, and I'm chugging Starbucks double shots and Rockstar, keeping me alert the whole drive. You called me halfway through the drive to ask me about this wheelchair, and I remember looking out of the front of my car and somehow getting from point A to point B, but I don't remember. The David Tennant 10th Doctor audios kind of propelled me through that through that trip and kept me alert. But then I went through the whole workshop, dead tired, trying my best to like stay alert, and just the act of getting, we had a spot right in front of the space that was cool.
Oh yeah.
But I do remember the capper to this story was by the end of the night. What time did the workshop start that morning? It was like 10 in the morning. I got into town at like 9.
Yeah.
I ended up being like a little late to the reading.
It was 10 or so.
So 10 o'clock at night at this point. We're on our way back to the car because we were going to head back to Chris and Emma's house first. And Chris and Emma just put me in the wheelchair and wheeled me back to my car because I had checked out physically for the, I'm like, just push me. I am dead.
Right. So, so try to picture that. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, even before I had even asked you if you were willing to, I was like, I was like, my hands were shaking. I was like, oh God, Robert, please don't hate me. Please don't hate me.
No, it was,
but
it was
fine. We have a wheelchair and we need to get it to the space.
It was also the hottest day of the year the next day. And we're wearing button down shirts. We had to walk from the parking garage to the theater. But we made it work. We got there and
wasn't there at some point a rope involved? I remember something about a rope.
Yeah. I may have been delirious, but I don't think I was delirious enough to bring a rope into it. I don't remember a rope, but I do remember the wheels had to like come off or something at some point.
They
like,
did, yeah.
It was insane. Oh,
it was quite the ordeal. But I think, like, needless to say, that was was it also, you know, a stressful ordeal? Yes, yeah. But was it rewarding? Yes, absolutely. I am so grateful for that. And was it an event that I think sort of signifies how caring the people that I'm working with are? I think yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if and it comes back to like my, you know, the caring nature of ERP, like, Robert, you are that mascot. You did that on 4 hours of sleep, and I'm forever grateful for that, and I will continue laughing about that experience.
Thank you.
Mostly
anything to help.
A large part, you know, to cover up the pain, but also, you know, because I just am really appreciative of that.
We'll wrap up. I have one more fun theater question for all of us, and I will try to come up with an answer too. Cool. And now I'm on record saying that I have to come up with an answer to this question that I wrote.
You got some time, though.
If you could have a drink with any character from a play, which character would it be and what would the drink be?
Wow.
You take a moment if you need to think this over. I would, I could see probably having a fine afternoon with the witch from Into the Woods. Drink-wise, I feel like some kind of Three Olives vodka, one of the colored ones that looks like a potion, because I want to feel fancy. Especially if it's the Meryl Streep witch or the Bernadette Peters witch, I feel like our sass levels would definitely be on the same level.
You have one percolating?
No.
Or, okay, I kind of have one.
Go.
So this is... This may be a little weird. Maybe like an insight into like my psychology or whatever. So I think that that mine would be Mephistopheles from Dr. Faustus, and, you know, judge me all you want. I'm like, that's probably like a definite tell into my psyche, but I think that like that's a character which would not only provide for an entertaining evening, but also I think could say a fair deal about what scotch we were drinking.
And Phil?
You know, I kind of really just want to see what Hamlet would be like if I got a drunk absinthe.
That's a good one.
And
are we confident that he's not on absinthe at any point in that?
You know, it's very possible. But who am I to judge? You know.
Fair enough.
I think it'd be an interesting time, and just see where the night takes us.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Don't have any specific plans. Just wait for the hallucinations to kick in. You know.
Well, guys, thank you so much for talking with me today. I'm glad we got a chance to expound a little bit more about our theater. And come back very soon.
Cool.
Phil, I know you will be back soon because your play is being featured soon for Ears.
Woo!
Yeah!
All right, thank you again.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you, Robert.
Hey, Robert. You guys done yet?
Yeah, they're done. So are you ready now? Is your meal done being cooked?
Yeah, the meal is done.
All right, sweet. Oh, and is that Will coming in too?
Yeah, Will's here with me. All right. We were just going to bring you a drink because you've been here all night.
All right. And next up, I am rejoined by our returning guest, our artistic director, Lauren M. Shover. Thank you for coming back, Lauren.
Of course. Hi, guys. How's it going?
And introducing William Gwynn, our special projects manager. Thank you for coming down to talk to us today.
Definitely. Glad to be here.
Now, Will, I'd like to send this first question off to you specifically because on the first episode, Lauren and I talked a lot about the history of starting ERP and our first production that went into it. You were kind of a special little flower to us. You went from young elephant to a member of the herd. You were one of the actors in our first production, Foothills Park. And I remember it was an absolute pleasure to work with you. You were always ready to just go to town on any question we had, workshop questions, any table work. And afterwards, I remember you expressed interest in joining us in the future for future projects. Mm-hmm. And here we are today. So could you talk just a little bit about your past joining us in the first place and what it was like going from being an actor in the show in a company versus being a member of the company?
Yeah, definitely. So I came on the same process that most actors would, where I was there at the New York audition, applied like everyone else, screwed up my monologue like most people shouldn't.
No.
And after forgetting half my monologue, freaking out to our marketing head, Emma, in the hallway that I had screwed everything up, you guys didn't call me into the room where I was luckily cast. So after working on the show with you guys and Dano, it was one of the first shows that I had worked on in New York and also in Philly, obviously, where I felt that we were actually doing something worthwhile. We were working on something that needed to be worked on and telling a story that kind of really needed to be told. And after that, I sat at home for a bit. I got back in New York, and I was really anxious. I was really wanting to do something similar again. So when I left, I went to Austin. I came back. Got back in here, and the moment I got here, I luckily received a message from Chris saying, you know, come meet with me. We have a lot of use for you and your ideas. Come in, let's talk, let's see what you can do. And that's how the transition started. I came in, I was excited to be there on day one. We hit the ground running, and ever since, it's been nonstop. We have tons of people coming in, we're doing readings, we have new ideas. And it's great. I feel like I'm inspired every day by the people I'm surrounded by.
Aww. Right back at you.
I'm not crying. You're crying.
That's awesome.
Awesome. And if you could tell me a little bit real quick, Lauren and I talked about this on the first episode, and we have featured a playwright from the series. But can you tell me a little bit about what led to the Elephant Ears reading series?
Yeah. So back when I was in high school/college in the mountains of North Carolina, which, believe it or not, is a pretty liberal place in certain areas, and we had a few playwriting friends of mine that would need to test new plays daily. So they would write a new page, literally sometimes it would just be three lines of dialogue, and you'd be walking through your hallway to get to class, and some burly man would be popping out of a room and asking you, like, can you hold on to this page and read this for me? I need to record it. I just need to know what it sounds like in someone's face. Like, I need to hear it out of your mouth. So we did this every day, and I realized how much this helped his work, having someone come in so early and tell him, this is what I think. Even if he didn't take our suggestions always, because let's be honest, some of them are probably crap, but it definitely helped from then on. And so whenever I came in and I worked with you guys on Foothill Parks, we had a similar experience working with Dano there and having him there, and we could tell him, like, this is what we think, this is what we want to happen. And it's easy for the playwright in that situation to feel overwhelmed, to have a lot of people shouting phrases at you. And so that's whenever I approached Chris and Lauren and the rest of the group and said, why don't we kind of take the playwright out of the equation for a bit? Why don't we work on it? And we come up with the notes and we give them so that we can inspire them to do better, so we can give them the tools that no one else is. And here we are.
Awesome. And it's been an incredible experience just doing this.
It has.
And I thank you for all the help that you have given us with it.
Absolutely.
Next question I have, this goes to both of you now.
Mm-hmm.
What is your typical genre of choice? We at ERP tend to do more contemporary works, but actually, using an Ears example, we did just recently workshop a play that was written, it was a contemporary play written in a classical style.
Mm-hmm.
So as Lauren, you can answer this from an actor or a director standpoint.
Sure.
Will, I know you do both as well. You also are really interested in reading plays. What is your preferred genre? And in fact, if you have different answers for each aspect of that, that's totally fine too.
Okay, well, personally, I've always been drawn more to the more serious side of things. Comedy's kind of, it's awesome and it's very entertaining. Don't get me wrong, I love comedy, but I think it kind of goes back to what we talked about in my initial interview of, like, why we started ERP, this whole, like, doing work because it needed to be done, having a purpose behind what we do. I find myself as an artist sometimes struggling with the inner battle of why I'm doing this, and really wanting it to be for some greater reason. And so for me, I'm always more drawn to the serious, like, dramatic side of things, and definitely more contemporary. But I also love when you can find a classical piece that relates to contemporary issues to show, like, even the one we did just workshop, that I won't, like, give away too much of, but it introduced the idea of particular issues in this particular play about environmental issues that could occur over and over and over again throughout centuries, and just that idea of these problems, like, never going away. And I definitely say that I'm more drawn to the contemporary, serious, dramatic stuff, but I'm not opposed to comedy, especially dark comedy, I would have to say. But I'm all over the place, but definitely more on the dramatic side.
What about in terms of acting? Is it the same for your acting ability?
I would say I loved my education at Bloomsburg University so much, but the one thing that they have incorporated since I've graduated, but unfortunately I did not really get to experience much, is working on classical pieces. We didn't really have, like, a Shakespeare class, and so I am one of these odd actors who tends not to really like working on Shakespeare and things like that, but I can totally appreciate it. The language is beautiful, all kinds of stuff like that. But as far as acting, I feel more when I can work on, like, a contemporary dramatic piece.
Thank you, Lauren. And can we just acknowledge real quick, even though it wasn't Bagheera, the continuing tradition of a small black animal coming into the recording space while we're recording? It was every animal, every episode has had an animal sneak in while we're recording.
We are very animal friendly.
Which I think is good. You know what? That should be the penultimate episode, is an elephant comes into the recording.
Okay, booth. I will work on that.
We'll see what's in the budget. Will, as we were, next question, or same question. What's your genre of choice? For any aspect of theater that you work on, be it acting or directing,
or
reading,
right? True. I think for me, I have to agree with Lauren. I'm definitely drawn towards the darker side. I love investigating more of what makes us who we are. That idea of honestly what we've lost. I think it's one of those things. It's very old school. The idea of everything kind of comes from the lessons we've learned in the past and what's happened to us then. And I fully believe that we are the people we are because of what we've gone through. And that pulls into every play that I enjoy. I have to admit, I know it's just a complete stereotype of myself here, that whenever I read anything that I like, I can always be like, oh, it's probably got that same plot line. Mm. But with that in mind, my absolute favorite playwright at the moment, I'll admit, is Samuel D. Hunter. And so he writes all these stuff that's taking middle America and make it relatable to everyone. Mm. And talking about the stories of these people, these everyday people that you might meet. And it's fantastic. It's something that as an actor, as a director, producer, reader, is something that I am super drawn to. Is telling the stories of these people and bringing them to the stage for us today.
I guess I would say as a director and an actor, as an actor, I definitely prefer to act in comedies. I really like the lighter side of it. I like being able to explore various physical challenges and different levels. But as a director, I'm following your answers too. I definitely like something a little more grounded in drama, seriousness. In fact, one of the first thing I ever directed, 50% of the cast is in this room right now. Because Lauren was my angel in purgatory in a 10-minute play about a man who had to listen to all of his lies throughout his life. And there were definitely some humorous moments in it, but it was really interesting to explore the different takes that each of these characters had and their relationship and what it meant for the overall piece. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And just to wrap things up with a little bit of a fun question.
Love the fun questions.
Always the best. So hypothetical. You have to live your life as the character from a play. Which play and which character would you pick and why?
Well, this is kind of a tough question. When I think about plays that come to mind, specific characters, it's really easy to be drawn to characters that I've actually played. But it's kind of this battle between what we're saying, like someone that you'd want to, someone that you relate to versus wanting to live their life. That's
right.
Really hard. So I'd say, well, actually with Robert, you, my junior year of college, we were both cast in The Shape of Things by Neil LaBute. I played Evelyn and you played Adam. And unfortunately, I have to say that I relate quite a lot to Evelyn. her passion, you know, not all the weird sociopathic tendencies she might have had, but her passion behind what she did and her huge perseverance through what she believed in, I could totally relate to that. And I supported it and it helped me really embody that character. So if I had to, off the top of my head, pick a character that I could easily, like, fit into her life, yeah, I could fit into Evelyn's life. Maybe I wouldn't be such a maniac, but I could definitely get on board with the way that she thinks.
Yeah, absolutely. Will?
Yeah, this is hard. I think there's more than a few characters that remind me a lot of who I want to be in my life, I guess. But as to one that I would literally want to be in their position 100%. I don't know that one exists. I think the closest for me would be kind of a mixture. There's Hal / Henry V, if you will, who kind of rises above all the tensions against him and takes it all in stride, knows that he's confident in himself. He's confident in what he can do, and he's confident in the country he can lead. I'm not saying he's the best person in the world, but I'm not saying I am either. So I think that's great. But as for characters that, like, I relate to, that their life, for whatever reason, just reminds me much of my own, I'll never be able to break apart from the connection I feel towards Tom Wingfield from Glass Menagerie. It's something I've carried with me as a kid. Like, I think I read that play when I was around 11 or 12, which no 12-year-old should read. And ever since, like, it reminded me a lot of my own situation and poverty and how he rises up. And what's honorable about him is that he leaves it behind, even if he never truly does in his heart, which is actually something that should be honorable in a sense. He decides to make himself better. He decides to go forward. He can't hold on to a family that's dying around him. He has to be the guy he's supposed to be. And
that's something that I feel a lot of.
Nice.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go slightly off track with my answer and choose Albus Severus Potter from Harry Potter and the Cursed Child that is currently running in London right now. I've always loved the Harry Potter series, so it's kind of a nice way to kind of bridge one of my passions into theater. But the character, I think, embodies a lot of what I strive for. He's very passionate about his goals, making things right, the difference between right and wrong. He also kind of embodies not judging a book by its cover, because he's one of the most noble, well-meaning characters in the play, and right at the beginning is sorted into Slytherin, which is has the reputation in the book series of being the evil house. So I kind of like that idea of blending those ideas, showing that there are gray areas in life, that not everything is split into black and white, good and evil. And he makes several mistakes in the play and learns from them and grows and continues to just push towards what he believes is right. All right.
Awesome.
Well,
great.
Thank you so much for talking with me again today. Thank you for coming back, Lauren.
Yeah.
And Will, it was awesome getting to talk to you today.
Absolutely.
Woo! Happy holidays, everybody.
Woo.
Right, that was fun as always. Who's left? Emma and Katie.
Oh, okay. Right, yeah, Emma and Katie. Send them on
our
in.
Marketing department. Woo! I will send them right in. But Bobby, I'm serious. Make it quick, and this is the last one. It's time to have holiday fun.
I know. Yeah, all right,
thanks.
I'll be quick. We'll have a nice little conversation, and then I'll be all yours.
Alright. Hurry up.
Alright.
I'll send in the clowns.
And last but certainly not least, I am talking with Emma Becker and Katie Wilson. Thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Happy to be here.
Could I just have you start by introducing yourself with your titles?
Sure. I'll go first so we can be in alphabetical order.
Yay!
So I'm Emma and I am marketing director for Elephant Room Productions. I was originally marketing director and then I switched to brand management director, and now I am back and happy to be here and super excited to have an awesome assistant in Katie.
What a journey.
I am Katie. My journey's a little shorter. I am the marketing assistant, and I'm having so much fun so far, and Emma's a great boss, and yeah.
I made her say that.
Oh, shucks. Worth pointing out, because I've not said it on the podcast, but before stepping down as marketing assistant, I previously held that title, then took on marketing director while you were brand management director, then took on podcast director and gave you back management director. It's been a fun little musical titles game that we've played.
But now I'm here.
And we're glad to have you. So how does Elephant Room Productions differ from other theater companies you've worked with? Emma, I imagine your answer might be slightly different because you've been with us from the ground floor, but mm-hmm. Katie, we were very blessed for you to join us earlier this year. So I guess that adds another level to the question of what's it like kind of being here from the get-go versus joining this already right. moving train.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think it's really cool for me since I have been here sort of from the beginning. I mean, Lauren and Chris sort of had this awesome, you know, brainchild and started it, and I was lucky enough to, you know, come in on the ground floor, which is a new experience for me because I have been lucky enough to work with several other awesome theater companies in New York and still have close connections to those companies. But I sort of came in after they had been a little bit established or, you know, further along, and I think that's great. But it's definitely a different perspective and a different kind of connection being with a company from the beginning because you have a different personal connection to it, kind of knowing how the inception was, and you know, it's just like a personal tie, and you feel really invested in wanting it to succeed because you have been there since the beginning. And I love how, you know, it is by city, which is really unique and really cool, and everyone I tell about that is really, you know, interested in that because it opens up so many more doors. So again, I love all the companies I work with, and I'm also really happy to be with ERP.
Aw.
No, I feel like my journey is different, but still similar feeling of love. I can't think of a better word than that.
So much love here.
This is it's such a beautiful company to work for, and I like it just encompasses that word completely. And I remember saying that to Lauren when we first talked about me coming on to this. She was like, what do you think, what does this company mean to you? And I just said, good, just good. I really did. I was like, because that's what it, that's what's meant to me since I learned about it, which was a little less than a year ago. I was lucky enough to kind of come on rather quickly after I learned about it because I think I fell so in love with the idea of what we do here. I've always, since I really started working professionally in theater, all I've ever wanted to do was work with and for things that are going to just progress. And I don't know if you heard that. That was
not a problem.
Sorry.
As I've said earlier, we have a three episode now history of animals joining the podcast.
We love animals here.
Actually, this is a kind of a cool segue. The reason that I kind of I don't know. I always want to be part of a job that is going to better the world in some way, and I also always want to be part of something theatrical. So the fact that I get to do both of those in one is just it's such a blessing for me. It's different from other places I've worked for because honestly, this is the first time I've taken on a role that's not acting or technical. So it's completely different in that sense, and it really gets me to like I don't know, I guess like stretch my creative muscles in other ways, which is really fun. And like I said, just a blessing to work for a company that I get to feel good about what I'm doing, but also feel like I'm filling that theatrical void too.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you both obviously have previous theater histories to ERP. What's a role from another theater company that you would say was the most challenging but fun in the end?
Well, so actually, it's funny. I think that I'm the member with the least actual theater experience. So I used to be a dancer. I was basically a dancer for my entire life until pretty recently. And, you know, personal things and life, you know, things change. And so dance is still an important part of my life. But I'm no longer kind of pursuing it in the same way. But dance is really similar to theater in a lot of ways, especially when you think of your typical story ballets, you know, like the Nutcracker and Cinderella. Like, they all involve, you know, a concrete storyline, maybe not so believable, you know, but there's serious acting involved in most dance performances that have, you know, plot lines and that kind of thing. And I was in a piece when I was in college, when I was pursuing a degree in dance, and it was very, very theatrical. And I think it was a challenge for me because I wasn't, I mean, it was a big college performance for me, and I had the lead role, which was really exciting. But it definitely required a lot of acting work for me, and that was sort of a new thing. But I had so much fun, and it was a really cool experience. And, you know, I was really proud of myself for doing it and for kind of taking that challenge on. And it's kind of a complicated plot line. But it was cool because I had to both work on my dance technique and also my acting technique. And I still kind of reflect on that role as a big turning point for me, just in terms of my dance ability and also working on my acting ability. And I've been lucky enough to do a couple acting things since then, even though I'm not a professional actor like most of the people in this company. it was really cool for me to work on that. So that was very difficult in the sense that it required the most of me, I think, theatrically, but also it was very rewarding. So.
Oh, sweet. all right, Katie, same question.
I would have to say one of my first professional jobs right outside of college was with a group called Equology Inc. They're a touring company. And depending on where you're located, we got to tour different parts of the United States. And so I was along the East Coast. And basically, we would bring different shows to different colleges along the East Coast. And our show was, we would bring it to college orientations to educate the kids about date rape. So there were four of us, and I was the only member of the four of us that was new that year. So everybody had kind of already like had their feet wet with this idea, and I got thrown in a week before we were supposed to have our first show, actually about 5 days, thrown into this, learned a script, and I played a rape victim. And it was an interactive thing, and it was just, it was very interesting because I got to talk about all of this while also kind of dealing with personal issues that had, you know, definitely laced my performance. And while it was incredibly challenging, it was one of the most rewarding experiences I've ever had, because I not only got to work with three amazing professional actors, one of which was a really good friend of mine from college and was at her wedding. She's amazing. But yeah, and she brought me into this project, and I'm so grateful for it, because it really did, like, just to see how, for lack of a better word, kids, like 19, 20 year olds would react to differently to literally watching somebody be raped on stage. It was fascinating, and I feel like it's one of the things that really lit the fire under me for wanting to always perform something that was going to make a difference and make people think and educate somebody while doing that.
For me, it was actually earlier this year. It was around this time last year that I started the rehearsals, but I was in a production of MAME earlier this year, and I was cast as Ito, the houseboy. And that character is written as an Asian American immigrant, and all of his, it's a comedy, it's a, you know, farcical show, but it was written at a time when it's a little different interpretation of what's okay. So all of his lines are written broken in English, like, oh, Missy Dennis will see you now, wait, like, all, you know, oh yes, very enlightening. It was really great for the time it was written, but does not work anymore. So the director called me, offered me this part, and he said, we're trying to do something different with it. And he was very vague as to what exactly he wanted, because the script we were using, it was an adaptation that he had adapted, but he still had the lines written. So he kept saying, play it light, play it, you know, up, play it light. And I still just, like, wasn't getting this character. And one day at rehearsal, I was hanging out with the cast in the house, and we were talking about the Birdcage, and I did an impression of Nathan Lane in that moment. Oh, dear God, I pierced the toast! And the director turns around and goes, Robert, that is what I want from Ito. So why is it every time you can do it out there, but every time you're on stage, you sound like you've grown four sets of balls? And I finally realized, I was like, oh, you could have just said gay. I would have gotten it right there. If you had just said gay, I would have gotten it. And from then on, he became, like, I was dressed in, like, a bellboy costume, and, like, I had this little flourish with how I moved. Like, I would hold my hand up a certain way, and I was just glide across the stage. It was perfect. It worked exceptionally well.
That's great.
And it's like, okay, so lesson to all you directors out there. If you want gay, just say gay. As Nancy Reagan would say, just say gay. I might be misquoting it.
It's a bridge,
Nancy
Reagan would
say. It's a cool, like, insight, though, to how, like, PC, I don't know.
Yeah.
But, you know what I mean? It's like, people try, but it's like, just say what you want.
Just say gay. Especially considering he was gay and I was gay. So, like, come on. We're on the same team.
Just be yourself, Robert.
So, wrapping things up with more of a fun question. If you could move one character from a play into a different play.
What? Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I know. This is
complicated. This is not the question I was told it was going to be.
Do you wish I had given you that question before we recorded?
I thought it was, what is the role that you, like, identify with?
I'm stressed.
Nope.
Oh, man.
Bye.
Oh. Can I swear on this?
Yes, you can. I can put an explicit thing.
I got pretty deep. Like, do what you want.
Oh, gosh.
If
you can move a character into a different... Oh.
I can go first.
Take a character from one play,
put it in another play.
Oh, I'm going to have fun with
this.
You go first.
Sure, why not?
I think you really are.
I need an example.
Guide
me, please.
All right, then. I would probably take... I would probably take the witches from Macbeth.
This is already going so well.
No. I would take the witches from Macbeth, and I would put them into Hamilton. Because I feel like Hamilton is somewhat of a tragic character anyway. You've already got some Macbeth. He actually even references Macbeth in the musical. So I imagine, I'm distorting history. Who said that wasn't allowed? So I can only imagine the second act of Hamilton would be very different if the witches had come to him and helped him along his path to success.
I'm not proud of this answer.
I don't care. I want
to
hear.
I feel also on the spot. But I'm gonna take the answer to. I'm gonna take what I thought would be a question, possibly. Nora from A Doll's House. Yeah, I remembered it.
Okay, Nora from A Doll's House.
I love A Doll's House so much, and I love Nora. And so my answer was like, the question was, what role would you want to play? I'd love to play Nora. Oh, sorry, I swore.
That's okay. I'll take it out.
So I love Nora, and so I kind of would want to put her in basically any Neil LaBute play.
Oh my god, I would love that.
Just because, like, the relationship, like, I mean, the whole thing of A Doll's House is like the relationship dynamic is so interesting, and again, in anything Neil LaBute writes, like, the relationship dynamic is also so interesting, and obviously very different time periods.
Yeah.
And I kind of want to see her reacting to someone who's not, like, Torvald.
I want to see that too.
Like, I want to see that, and that's like can a cop out answer. Like, we can totally
write
that.
Can you and I write
that?
All right, we're gonna make it happen.
You're on.
I'll market it.
So yeah.
All right, Katie, you've run out of time.
All right. So I swear I'm not like copying off of Emma.
No, go for it.
But this is all right.
Are you also doing Doll's House?
But I am putting somebody anywhere. A play that is very near and dear to my heart because it's my favorite show that I performed in college is Arsenic and Old Lace. And I just
oh my god,
take,
I love that
I
play so much.
I want to take one and or both of the old ladies, Martha and Abby, and put them literally anywhere.
and just
see how they react. I want to see
do
who
you
they
have
kill.
Do you have a specific play you could think
put
of?
Put them in your living room. Just like
put them in my living room.
Musicals are on the table too.
I was going to say, a musical would be interesting,
Sweeney
but
Todd.
I kind of...
Yes!
No, let's put them in Sweeney Todd.
Okay.
Martha and Abby are in Sweeney Todd, and they're just wreaking havoc. And that's my answer.
Both it's funny die. Because they both have the same philosophy as Sweeney Todd, but very, very different justification as to why.
It's a lot more hilarious.
It's that is, we are going to collectively come together and we are going to write all three of those.
I
expect it on my desk by midnight.
There we go.
There we go. I put a timeline on you. Timeline. I don't know what a timeline is.
Timeline.
That's going to be the name of the episode is Timeline.
Timeline.
Well, thank you so much for talking with me today. Thank you, Emma and Katie, for coming on.
Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Robert.
Well, we've reached the end of the holiday special. I want to thank you all for listening. We'll be back with our regularly scheduled playwright interviews in January. The next playwright on deck is Professor David A. Miller talking about his play Semi-Permanent. Just to give another plug for ears, if you're a playwright out there with a story you want to be heard, please send it to us at erpsubmissions@gmail.com. Remember, every story deserves to be heard, so join our elephant herd and have your story told today.
Robert!
What? Yeah, Laura?
Robert! Are you finished with the interviews now?
Yeah, Lauren, everyone's finished. I just gotta finish editing it.
Fantastic! Well, the party is still jiving, so I think it's about time you put work aside and come get your holiday cheer on.
I know. But it was really great having the opportunity to introduce the company members on this podcast. I think everyone really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. But okay, Robert, I have a super fruity cocktail chilling on ice in the living room for you, so let's
All right. I guess you're right. It's time for me to join the party.
Yes, and it's your turn for utter nonsense.
Swoop!
And I am super excited to hear how all this hard work turns out. But let's just put work aside for the rest of the night and get this party started. By the way, Robert, thank you for all of the hard work that you do. Without our hardworking elephants like you and the rest of our herd, none of this would be possible. So to you and all of the elephants here at ERP, thank you.
Oh, you're too kind, Lauren. And to all our generous donors, talented artists, and loving supporters, thank you. A sincere and honest... Wait, hold on. Did you mention a fruity cocktail waiting for me?
Yes, Robert. You know your personal bartender has you covered.
I can always count on you. Wishing you all a safe and happy holiday season from all of us here at Elephant Room Productions.